Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and it's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on Social Security when we come back. When you're making $50,000 a year, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Well, then on top of that, you pay a 17% tax on that same $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500. That means you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your income tax on top of your Social Security tax. And that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and Status, that is the school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. I want you to do it right now before you forget. GeorgeGordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about Social Security and the voluntary nature of the Social Security Act. We found out from Larry Beecraft's brief that Social Security is voluntary. You don't have to join. 95% of Americans have joined, belong to the program. Most people are satisfied with it, love it. It's the third rail of politics, and God bless them all. George Gordon doesn't belong. 14 million people don't belong. I don't want to belong. I don't want to be forced into it. I haven't been. I voluntarily joined up, thought I had to because it was the law, and then found out when it wasn't the law that I could opt out, and so I did. So we're looking at a brief, and I said last time that I would give you Larry Beecraft's webpage. Here it is. It's http://fly.highway.net. So it's http://fly, F-L-Y, dot. Now this highway is a little tricky. It's spelled H-I-W-A-A-Y, two A's in highway, dot net. So if you can get those two A's in there, it's H-I-W-A-A-Y dot net. You can get onto Larry Beecraft's webpage. He has a lot of neat information on there. Larry Beecraft is an attorney, Huntsville, Alabama, one of the good guys. There are about five good attorneys in America. Larry's one of those five, conservative, practices gold and silver, teaches gold and silver, advocates hard money, opposed to income tax, and deals with income tax and defends income tax cases. Very good at it. Met him back in the 1980s. Super good guy. Getting to be an old man now. He's like me, you know. Past 65, you're past your prime. Remember, that's Larry Beecraft, spelled B-E-C-R-A-F-T, and that webpage, http://fly.highway. Highway is spelled H-I-W-A-A-Y. Dot net. All right, here's some more of Beecraft. He said, the modern day act is codified at 42 U.S.C. section 301 through 433. Let me interject something here. Here's your Social Security contract. Beecraft has something to say about contracts and says this isn't a contract, it's a statute. But I want to add my 2 cents worth here. A contract has 4 elements to it. It's an offer by somebody to somebody who accepts. So it's an offer with an acceptance. It has to be time and consideration involved. Social Security is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. It's a contract. It's not called a contract any more than a driver's license is called a contract. In fact, they specifically tell you, no, it's not a contract. But, you know, I'm just an old country boy, and when I see a critter that's black and white, and then he smells real bad, I call it a skunk. Now, some people call those critters civet cats. But whether you call it a civet cat or a skunk, you know, it's just a matter of semantics. So whether you call it a statute or a contract, always keep in mind that a contract has 4 elements. And this Social Security contract is voluntary. You don't have to participate in it. If it was a law, you'd have to participate in it, like thou shalt not steal, thou shalt do no murder. I mean, you have to participate in those or you get penalized, whether you like it or not. So that's my 2 cents worth in there. Technically, government says it's not a contract. If there were a requirement that every American join the Social Security scheme, one would expect to find language in the act similar to the following. Quote, every American of the age of 18 or older shall submit an application with the Social Security Administration and shall provide thereon the information required by regulations prescribed by the Secretary. Every member of Social Security shall pay the taxes imposed herein, and records of such payments shall be kept by the Secretary for determining the amount of benefits to which such member is entitled hereunder. Unquote. But amazingly, there is no such language or similar language that appears within the Act, and particularly there is no section in the Act, that is Title 42, Section 301 through 433. So if you want to see the terms and conditions of your contract, you go to Title 42 of the U.S. Code, you turn to Section 301, you read through 433, and there's the terms and conditions of the program. Take it or leave it. So there's no such language, there's no similar language that appears within this Act that I just quoted to you, and particularly there is no section thereof which could remotely be considered as a mandate that anyone join Social Security. The closest section of the Act which might relate to this point is the requirement that anyone seeking benefits under the Act must apply for the same, but this relates to an entirely different point than a requirement that you join. If you want the benefits, you have to join. But what if you didn't want the benefits? And I'm one of those. I don't want the benefits. I don't want the tax. I don't want the benefits. I don't want to participate. I'm out. I'm out of here. Now, since the statutory scheme fails to impose any such requirement, the next question to be asked is whether perhaps the Social Security regulations themselves might impose such a duty. But here, the regulations are no broader than the Act itself, and the duty to apply for and obtain a Social Security card or a Social Security number boils down to the following, which is found at 20 CFR section 422.103. It says, B, applying for a number, 1, Form SS-5, an individual needing a Social Security number may apply for one by filing a signed Form SS-5. Application for a Social Security card at any Social Security office and submitting the required evidence. 2. Birth registration document. The Social Security Administration may enter into an agreement with officials of a state to establish as part of the official birth registration process a procedure to assist the Social Security Administration in assigning Social Security numbers to newborn children. Newborn children. Where an agreement is in effect, a parent, as part of the official birth registration process, need not complete a Form SS-5 and may request that SSA assign a Social Security number to the newborn child. It becomes a part of their birth registration process. C, how numbers are assigned. 1, request on Form SS-5. If the applicant has completed a Form SS-5, the Social Security Office that received the completed Form SS-5 will require the applicant to furnish documentary evidence. After review of the documentary evidence, the completed Form SS-5 is then forwarded to Social Security's Central Office. If the electronic screening or other investigation does not disclose a previously assigned number, Social Security Administration Central Office assigns a number and issues a Social Security numbered card. Number 2. Request on birth registration document. Where a parent has requested a Social Security number for a newborn child as part of an official birth registration process described in paragraph B2 of this section, the state's Vital Statistics Office will electronically transmit the request to Social Security Administration Central Office. Using this information, Social Security Administration will assign a number to the child and send the Social Security number card to the child at the mother's address. The purported duty to apply for and obtain a Social Security number therefore boils down to this. You get a number if you need it or if you request it. There is no legal compulsion to do so. Now, with the act of applying for and obtaining a Social Security number being entirely voluntary, the next question to be asked is this, and that is, whether any state can force you to use this number, which is voluntary in the first place. Now, this appears to have been addressed by Section 7 of the Privacy Act of 1974, cited at 88 Statute 1896, which reads as follows, quote, Section 7A1 of the Privacy Act, quote, it shall be unlawful for any federal, state, or local government agency to deny to any individual any right, benefit, or privilege provided by law because of such individual's refusal to disclose his Social Security account number. 2. The provisions of paragraph 1 of this subsection shall not apply with respect to A, any disclosure which is required by federal statute, or B, the disclosure of a Social Security number to any federal, state, or local agency maintaining a system of records in existence and operating before January 1, 1975, if such disclosure was required under statute or regulation adopted prior to such date to verify the identity of an individual, or B, any federal, state, or local government agency which requests an individual to disclose his Social Security account number shall inform that individual whether the disclosure is mandatory or voluntary, by what statutory or other authority such number is solicited, and what uses will be made of it. Unquote. You can see also United States versus $200,000 in currency cited at 590 FedSup 866 in the Southern District of Florida, 1984. So it seems perfectly logical then, if having a Social Security number is not mandatory but purely voluntary, no state can use the lack of a number in any adverse way against anyone. The state cannot make that which is voluntary under federal law something which is mandatory under state law. So what should the American people do who are opposed to Social Security for whatever reason, be it the contention that it's the prelude to the beast number or any other? They should constantly inform those requesting the number that there's no obligation to have one. Now, of course, you may be cunningly coerced into waiving your rights due to your ignorance. You know, that's always a possibility. In a case called Miller versus California, an attorney out there testing this issue of the requirement that California require a Social Security number on your driver's license, he refused to give it. Case went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court came back and said, well, if you've got a number, you got to use it. Miller had a number, but he refused to divulge it. So California refused to give him a driver's license without a Social Security number. But what hasn't been tested is, we'll walk in, one of you people out there, without a Social Security number, somebody that doesn't have one or hasn't rescinded it. And then say, I want a driver's license. Then you can come back, and now you got an action. Now let's go into court and let's go test that. Got to remember that the courts only answer the question that's been raised. They don't go beyond that question and answer something that might come up in the future. So tuck that one away in your heart. Here are a few questions that you might want to answer. Is Social Security mandatory? No, it isn't. Is school enrollment dependent on a Social Security number? The answer is no, it is not. Is employment dependent upon a Social Security number? The answer to that is yes. Number four, is Social Security voluntary? The answer is yes. Number five, is Social Security the mark of the beast? The answer is yes. Number six, can government require anyone to obtain a Social Security number? The answer is no. Number seven, does government require anybody to obtain a Social Security number? The answer is no. Number eight, when do you need a Social Security number? You need a number when you seek employment and the employer requires it, or when you're seeking benefits from Social Security. Number nine, can you be refused employment because you do not have a Social Security number? The answer is yes. Number 10, can anyone be denied benefits without a Social Security number? The answer is yes. And number 11, can you be employed without a Social Security number? And the answer is yes, if your employer will do it, but you can't make him do it. So there's the story from Larry B. Craft on the voluntary nature of Social Security. Now, Beecraft also went on in a separate brief called Comment Upon the Voluntary Nature of Social Security, and I thought I'd share that one with you also. Here's Larry Beecraft again. Remember, Larry Beecraft, webpage, http://fly.highway, spelled HIWAAY.net. Remember, there's a double A in that highway. Beecraft goes on to say, today, every day, Americans are constantly confronted with greater and more frequent requests from all too many sources that they provide to the inquiring parties their number of the beast, the Social Security number. The examples of this modern-day phenomenon are numerous and known to all of us. Many states are now moving to ostensibly require the display of Social Security numbers upon driver's licenses. Public school officials demand that school-age children obtain Social Security numbers before those children may be enrolled in any public school. Hospitals seek to obtain Social Security numbers for each child born in their facilities. Private parties of all kinds, from banks to employers, deem it essential that they obtain a Social Security number of everyone with whom they may conduct any business. Well, with all of these entities making these demands, surely the law must contain a requirement that everyone have one of these Social Security numbers, this number of the beast. Or could it be possible that everybody simply acts like lemmings, dutifully following the herd instinct without any question, assuming such requirement without any knowledge of it? More simply put, does the law demand that everybody apply for and obtain a Social Security number, or is such purported obligation nothing more than a lot of hot air? Well, again, the first inquiry regarding the legal duty to apply for and obtain a Social Security number must involve an examination of the U.S. Constitution and the powers granted therein to Congress. And to determine this power, we've already covered the subject matter of the voluntary nature of Social Security, and I gave you a number of citations. Congress does not have the power to require you to get a Social Security number, but Congress may cunningly coerce you into waiving your rights due to your ignorance. And that goes on every day. Goes on all the time. So let's talk for a minute here about what do you do when somebody asks you for the Social Security number? I mean, it goes on all the time. Well, what if somebody, I always call this the Denny's waitress test. The Denny's waitress test. Let's go into Denny's restaurant and sit down and order lunch, shall we? We walk into Denny's restaurant and the waitress comes over and she gives you a menu. A glass of water. She says, what would you like to drink? And you tell her. She comes back with the drinks. And now she comes back with the order pad and she's about to take your order. But before she takes your order, she hands you a clipboard, and on the clipboard is an 8.5 by 11 paper. And she says to you, now fill this out, and I'll be right back to take your order. Now, you look at the clipboard, and it says, what's your name and address, phone number, Social Security number, where do you work, how much money do you make, what's your marital status, do you have insurance or not? Are your children male or female? Are they enrolled in school? What's your children's ages? And maybe ask you a few questions about your health. Do you have hemorrhoids and etc.? What would you think of that? Now, when you go into a doctor's office or a dentist and they hand you this clipboard with this paper on it, you dutifully fill this out and you give this information. In almost every case, I can't think of any case where they don't ask for a Social Security number. Dentists do, doctors do, insurance companies do. So far, the Denny's waitress has not been requiring me to give a Social Security number before she takes my order for lunch. But what if she did? Wouldn't you think that that was strange? You'd think it's strange because they haven't done it in the past. But if it's something that's done routinely, you accept it and you give it. Let me ask you this. If you wouldn't give your Social Security number, if you wouldn't fill out this information, asking for this private personal information for a Denny's waitress, why do you do it for the doctor, the dentist, or the insurance agent? If it's personal private information that is not the business of the Denny's waitress, why is it the business of the dental assistant or the doctor's nurse or the insurance salesman? What's the difference? What is Social Security for? So, you know, if you want to be private and if you want to have personal private rights, that's a decision that you make. If you want some benefit, for instance, you walk into your local welfare office and you say, well, I want welfare and food stamps. And they say, well, good. If you want welfare and food stamps, fill out this form. And you say, well, no, I'm not going to fill out that form because the information's personal and private, and I'm not going to give you my Social Security number, not going to tell you my name and address, I'm not going to tell you how much I earn every year or where I work or how many children I have. And the welfare lady says, well, if you don't give us that information, we're not going to give you these benefits. It's a choice that you make. Do you want to waive the benefits or do you want to get the benefits? Well, most people that go into a Social Security office want benefits. And so they give their number and they give information that's personal and private. Now, George Gordon is a personal private person. And I don't have a Social Security number. I used to have one. I rescinded mine. Got rid of it. And when I go into Denny's restaurant, I'm not going to give her my Social Security number. Number one, I don't have one to give. Number two, when I go to the dentist's office, they always give me this form. And they want me to fill it out. And when it comes to Social Security, I write in there none, N-O-N-E. And they always come back and ask me, Mr. Gordon, you put none in here, and they almost inevitably say it's the law, you have to have one. Surely you've got one. Everybody has a Social Security number. And I tell them, no, I don't have one. And they look at you like, oh my God. I had one nurse tell me one time, we can't enter this information into our computer without your Social Security number. And I told her, that's all right with me. That's not my problem. I don't care if they enter this into their computer or not. All I did was I came here to get a tooth filled. I came here to get a tooth pulled. I came here for services. Now, if that same lady said, well, we're not going to render these services to you because you don't have a Social Security number, I would get her name and address, and get the name and address and all of the information that I could concerning the dentist, and I would go in and sue them in federal court for a discriminatory policy against me personally and probably against a suspect classification of persons. I would allege that this is religious discrimination because I'm a Hebrew and I practice Hebrew law. I practice the Mosaic law. I'm not numbered and I'm not identified by some foreign and alien agency called government. I don't want to participate in that. Now, I'm not opposed to you people that do participate or want to participate. I just want to point out to you that, you know, just because somebody comes up to you and demands of you and says, well, you have to give me this information. No, I don't. You're in a hospital, and then the nurse comes in and says, well, we want to give you a birth certificate, and we got to know what your Social Security number is. You don't have to give anybody a Social Security number to get hospital services. Do you mean to tell me that Mexicans and other foreigners can come into the United States and get free medical services and they're not even citizens of the United States, much less have a Social Security number? They can get services in the hospital and you can't? Because you don't have a Social Security number? I mean, boys and girls, are you out of touch with reality here? Surely if a Mexican illegal immigrant can get medical services and get you, the taxpayers of America, to pay for it without a Social Security number, if a dumb, illiterate wetback can get medical services, surely you, an educated American with a degree after your name, should be able to do the same thing, shouldn't you? You know, I'm just pointing it out. School officials, you know, I had children in school. One time I had a school official ask for a Social Security number for my boy Ted, and I said he doesn't have one. Said, well, he can't be enrolled for school. I said, that's fine. That's no problem. I really don't want to send him to school anyway. I just brought him up here because you have a compulsory education law. So I just wanted you to know that when he doesn't go to school, which if you don't enroll him, I guess he's not going to go to school. And if he doesn't go to school, I suppose you're going to want to charge me with child neglect. And when you do, I'm going to put you on the witness stand and cross-examine you as to our conversation here today. Can you show me any law, rule, regulation, code, usage, practice, or remedy that you're relying upon to deny us enrollment in school because he doesn't have a Social Security number? Well, this woman went back, talked a little bit, came back and said, well, in your case, we can waive it. See, what they do is they put pressure on you to get you to cave in. So it's up to you to tell them, well, I'm not caving in. Now what do you want to do? What are you going to do? Arrest me? Put me in jail? What if somebody said, I'm going to call a cop and have you arrested? I'll tell you what I'd tell them. I'd say, well, be my guest. Get after it. And then when you do, there's a problem with false arrest and false imprisonment. You know? So let's talk about litigation. You know, just because somebody threatens you doesn't mean that they're going to carry it out. They're threatening you because they want to get you to give up your position. I had a lady in the hospital one time, and they said to her, you have to get a birth certificate. And she said, no, I don't, and I'm not going to. And the nurse came in and started asking her for information. She says, I'm not going to answer your questions. Get the hell out of here. No, that's just the way life is. You don't have to get a birth certificate. Most people want them. For all of you people that want birth certificates, all you people that want Social Security numbers, you're in the majority. Get after it. I'm not trying to convince people that they shouldn't get a birth certificate or that they shouldn't get a Social Security number. I'm just here to tell you that if you don't want it, you know, there's a way for you to avoid it. And I'm one that doesn't want it. And I'm not going to be cunningly coerced into waiving my rights due to some ignorance. So, No matter who asks you for the number, it's a voluntary act on your part to give that person the number. I'll talk more about that when we get to the Social Security letters, but I just wanted to point out to you that just because somebody asks you for a number, just because somebody tells you or asks you for personal private information, doesn't mean you have to give it. Now, if you want credit at the dentist's office, well, then you're probably going to have to give that personal private information because you're seeking credit. I'm not seeking any credit. I pay cash. I pay in gold coin. If they want gold, now, of course, most people don't want gold coin. They want Federal Reserve notes. Oh, okay, I'll pay in Fed notes or Russian rubles or European euros or Indian rupees. You know, whatever it is you want, Japanese yen, I'll go get you Japanese yen. I can do that. But you can't know what my Social Security number is because I don't have one. And if you happen to have one, that doesn't mean that you have to give it out to everybody just because you asked for it, just because they demand it. And furthermore, Amish people that don't have Social Security numbers, you know, they can buy insurance if they want to, and they can enroll their children in school if they want to, and they can get medical services if they want to, and so can you. So the next time somebody makes these demands upon you, why don't you just tell them no? Can you remember that, boys and girls? No. What is it about no that you don't comprehend? Can you do that? They tell you, you know, for drugs, you know, just say no. You know, for Social Security numbers and other personal information, just say no. Okay? I know it's a wild new idea, but, you know, test it and see what you think of it. Well, we're at the halfway point, and we've got to give you a couple of reminders here. So let me do that, and we'll get back to Larry Beecraft and this thing of Social Security. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the beliefs and opinions of the sponsors or management or the staff of this network or radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, you can get that at the website georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. And we conduct a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about our homeschooling program, just go to the homeschooling page at the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports now on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. We do that 7 days a week. All right, we're taking a look here at Social Security. And I'm giving you some information from Larry Beecraft. Remember Larry Beecraft's website, http://fly.highway.net. That highway is the only odd part. It's spelled H-I-W-A-A-Y, two A's in highway. Maybe Larry went to public school and doesn't know how to spell highway. Do you ever think of that? Well, in the Social Security Act, Congress imposed excise taxes upon employers, and those tax receipts were to be deposited with the Treasury. The Act further provided schemes whereby participants could enjoy unemployment and retirement benefits. So when the Act was adopted, parties opposed to the Social Security Act made challenges to that Act, and they relying upon some, if not all, of the various cases that we showed you in the last program. Came up with, yes, Social Security can be imposed upon corporations. And we see that in an obscure old-timey case, which is called the Hale versus Hinkle case. Hale versus Hinkle. I'll come up to Hale versus Hinkle here in a little bit. Now, Larry Becraft put a section in here. He says, Social Security is not a contract. I'm going to leave that out. If you want to read the Social Security is not a contract, he contends that it's a statute. It's a law. I showed you, I think, in the last program that Social Security is, in fact, a contract because a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. But the government tells us that Social Security is not a contract, it's a tax. Now, I want to point something out. If you've got a tax, it's mandatory. It's not voluntary. A contract is voluntary. So while Social Security is not called a contract, it has these four elements, the four elements of a contract. To have a contract, you have to have an offer, and then somebody has to accept the offer. They have to have consideration, and there has to be a time element in that contract. Social Security has a time element. You sign up forever. Social Security has an offer. They're offering you something, 108 benefits. Social Security has an acceptance. It's an application called SS5. And Social Security has consideration. You pay your Social Security contribution. Now, if it was insurance, we'd call it a premium. You can call it a contribution. You can call it a premium. You can call it a tax. You know, whatever turns you on, whatever makes you feel good, do it. So Larry has a section here in this brief that says Social Security is not a contract. I dissent from that opinion. And we'll leave it right there. Now let's talk about Social Security and its benefits. Social Security pays you benefits. And for those benefits, you have to pay a tax, the Social Security tax. And the tax is kind of unique. You pay half and your employer pays half. And it's called, it comes under a doctrine called the Doctrine of Unjust Enrichment. So Congress comes along and says, well, okay, we want you to join Social Security, and they impose Social Security upon all the employers of America. So the employers came to all of their employees and said, okay, now here it is, 1935, and you've been working for us for years, and now Congress has imposed the Social Security Act. If you want to continue working here, you have to sign up. These people didn't have to sign up, but the employer demanded it, and the employees all volunteered. Now, evidently, all of the employees who were compelled to join up in 1935 wanted to, because there are no cases in the record, no Supreme Court cases, no litigation of any employee saying, no, I don't want to participate. I just want to work here, but I don't want Social Security. Evidently, everybody wanted it. Now, there were a couple of employers that said, no, we don't want to participate. And the Supreme Court said, oh, yeah, you got to participate because it's an excise tax and Congress can levy this excise tax. But you see, labor is not an excise privilege. Labor is a right. You have a right to work. Now, that doesn't mean you have a right to work for General Motors, because General Motors doesn't have to hire you. But you have a right to labor, and you have a right to the proceeds that come from your labor. You don't have to volunteer for the income tax. You don't have to volunteer for Social Security. You don't have to work for General Motors. And you can work, and you can work for yourself in private business. Yes, there are businesses, there are private enterprises that you can work in which you don't need a Social Security number. You don't need government's permission to earn a living, believe it or not. Now, leaving that issue aside, let's take a look now at what the benefits and what the taxes are and the numbers that go along with it. Because Social Security is the poorest retirement program. It's the poorest program that I have ever seen or analyzed or looked at, economic program bar none. If there's anything poorer or worse than Social Security, would you let me know what it is? Let me give you these numbers, and I'll just show you that when I started back in 1950, I started Social Security. I went down and got a Social Security number when I was 11 years old. I wanted to deliver newspapers for the Humboldt Standard, and in order for me to do that, I had to join Social Security, and the maximum amount that was taxed was $3,600. The tax rate was 2.25%, and the maximum amount of Social Security tax that you could pay was $81 a year. $81 a year on $3,600 worth of income. In 1954, it was raised to 3%. In 1955, it was raised to, it continued at 3%, I should say. But the maximum amount that was taxed was raised to $4,200. So there are two increases that have been going on with the Social Security tax rate. That is, the rate itself, as a percentage of the amount of money that you earn, has been rising from 2.25% to 15.3% in the year 2000. And the amount of dollars that you earn that is subject to the tax has constantly been raised. So they taxed you up to $3,600 at 2.25%, a maximum of $81 in 1951. And in the year 2000, they taxed you at the rate of 15.3%. Maximum tax amount was, or the amount of earnings being taxed was $76,200, so that your maximum tax was $11,658.60. So it went up from 2.25% to 15.3%, and the amount being taxed went up from $3,600 to $76,200. So there's two ways for them to raise the tax, raise the amount of revenue. Now that's a pretty big increase. You know, if we just take let's just try it here. Let's take $11,658, 658.60, and let's divide that by the maximum back in 1950, which was $81. And that's 143 times. 143 times more. It's just almost 144. They've raised that 144 times. Now the amount being taxed goes from $3,600 to $76,200. So if you take $76,200 and you divide that by the $3,600, which was the maximum back in the olden days, they've raised that 21 times. That's 2,100%. So they've raised the percentage, that is the total number of dollars that they tax, in addition to the percentage that they tax you. I mean, that's a pretty significant increase, and we have to continually make these increases, otherwise this Ponzi scheme collapses. You got to bring more and more people into the program. You got to raise the percentage, and you got to raise the total number of dollars being taxed, and you have to do that periodically in order to get enough money to pay the new beneficiaries who are retiring. That's the classic example of a Ponzi scheme. So I saw that and I said, "Yeah, I don't want to participate in that. Let me out." Now, if you were to continue this, let's suppose for the sake of our argument here, let's take 11,658. Now, this is the total amount, this is the maximum amount of dollars that you're going to pay, which has raised from 81 to 11,658, or it's raised 144 times. Now, let's take a young person today who's earning $76,200. That would be somebody that graduates from law school. Somebody that just came out of law school, and the top half of his class will start at $84,000 a year. If you're a doctor coming out of medical school, you're going to start at something more than this $76,200. So let's just take $11,658. I'll just round it off to $11,650 times 144. That means that that 40 years from now, you're going to be paying $1,677,600 a year in Social Security taxes. If we just follow the last 40 years, that's the way it's going to work out for the next 40. Can you believe that? Can you imagine that? See, that's what the Ponzi scheme does. Now, they have raised this amount of tax, that is the maximum number of dollars that you earn. So we'll take the 2,000 number, 76,200. So let's just take 76,200. And we'll multiply that times 21. And that means that you will be making $1,600,000,000 a year. $1,600,200,000 a year in order for you to pay that kind of tax. Isn't that just special? Did I say a billion? Excuse me. $1,600,200. Let me try that one again. Make sure I got this number right. $76,200 times 21. No, we got $1,600,200. You know, we're talking about millions and millions of dollars here. Pretty soon you'll be talking about billions, just like our government. You know, now we talk about trillions of dollars. You know, our gross national product isn't in the billions anymore, it's in the trillions. The national budget isn't in billions anymore, it's in trillions of dollars. Well, it's these dollars are getting cheaper and cheaper, and as the Ponzi scheme goes on, you got to have more and more dollars. So if you took 11,658, let's see if I got this right now, and we're taking $11,658. And we're going to multiply that times 144. Just do that. $1,678,752. Well, then, if you compared those two numbers, about $1,006,000 each, Social Security is going to be taking everything that you earn, isn't it? Now, here's another factor that you want to factor in here, and that is in 1935, when everybody started in to Social Security, they taxed you 0.5% for the employer, 0.5% for the employee, for a total of 1%. That was in 35. First person started drawing in 1940. In 1940, there were 80 people paying in for everybody drawn out. 5 years later, it was 45-1. By 1957, it was 16 people paying in for everybody drawn out. Today, it's 3.2, headed for 2-1, and by 2020, it'll be 1-1. For everybody paying in, there'll be one person drawn out. It's either 2020 or 2040. Now, look at the confluence of these facts. The maximum dollars taxed has moved from 3,600 to 76,200. Now, these are the latest numbers I have, the year 2000. The maximum amount paid went from $81 in 1950 to $11,658. The total number of people paying in 1957 was 16 people paying in for everybody drawn out. Today, it's 3.2, that is in 2000, 3.2 paying in for everybody drawn out. Today, it's 2-1. And by the year 2020, I believe I saw the numbers, it'll be 1-1. And if it wasn't 2020, it'll be 2040. It's in that period when the Social Security Fund runs out of money. Can you see why President Bush comes to you and says, hey, this thing's unsustainable, it's in crisis? Of course, the Democrats say, well, that's not a problem. Why, we've got all these bonds in Social Security. So since the Reagan years, you know, Social Security raised its tax rate up. Let's take a look here. About 1983. The rate was 9.35% in 83, went to 14% in 84, 15 15.3% in 1990, 15.3% in 1992. Now that's for self-employed. So you went from 2.25% to 15%, but it went from 9 to 14% in 1 year, 83 to 84. So that was when they had that Social Security crisis, and they said, we got to solve this problem. I'm going to solve it for 50 years, they said. 50 years, 1983. And they started running a surplus. And that surplus is going to run until the year 2013 or 2017, something like that. Then it breaks even. Then it starts running into deficit. Well, they took that money, that surplus, that profitability from 1983 until 2013, up until right now, 2005, they've taken, spent it all on government operations. It's all gone. The money's gone spent. And they put an IOU in the Social Security Trust Fund. So the trust fund is sitting there, I don't know, something like $1 trillion worth of these IOUs. With, you know, if you're going to redeem the IOUs, you got to raise taxes or go to the taxpayer to get the money, don't you? You know, talk about phony baloney. You know, I can't describe this. Ponzi, you know, was arrested and put in jail back in 1921 for doing this. Nobody's going to go to jail for doing this because Congress and the government of the United States, they have the lawmaking police power. You know, they can do this. So when I looked at these numbers some years ago, 1968, I said, I want out of this thing. I couldn't figure out how to get out until 1978, and I opted out. I didn't know how to rescind until 1984. Then I got the hell out, 1984. Now, here's my personal numbers. From 1950, when I joined with the newspaper company, until 1978, I paid in $12,000 and some change into Social Security. I paid the maximum amount every year. Had I stayed in the system from 1978 until today, that is, until I would have retired in the year 2004, I guess, or 3, something like that, I would have paid in an additional $141,000 for a total of $153,000 and change. Do you know how much I'd be entitled to, how much I could get back from the system? Well, I'd be able to get $805 a month plus the cost of living adjustment, which would raise it up a little bit, you know, every year. Every time inflation goes up 7%, government gives you a 3% cost of living indexed, you know, raising benefits. Isn't that nice of them? Inflation goes up by 100% and they give you 50%. Inflation costs you $2 and government gives you $1. That's nice of them. So I looked at that and I said, I want out of this thing. So I got out of it and I took my $141,000 and I did something else with it. I'm not going to tell you what I did with it. I'm just going to tell you I did something else with it. Now I'm 66 years old. I'm not on Social Security. I'm not entitled to the program, but I am 100% satisfied with what I did with my money. And that's George Bush offering you this individual investment accounts. Where I disagree with Bush is I don't want government to tell me that I have to invest my money in the stock market because that's a dead loser. You know, you're better off to leave your money in Social Security, as bad as Social Security is, than to invest in the stock market. And I suppose the stock market is probably better. You'll lose less with the stock market than you will with Social Security. Because I think Social Security is worse than the stock market. But, you know, it's like getting the red death pill or the green death pill. So I said, I want the white life pill. Let me out of this program. Bush has got a good point. If you could invest your money any way you wanted to, I think you'd be better off. Some of you people would invest it in lottery tickets and lose it all, and some of you people would invest in the stock market and lose most of it, and some of you people would invest it in something intelligent and actually make money. And that's what freedom of choice is all about. You get to choose what you want to do, and you get to make your own mistakes. Government came along in 1935 and said, you people are too damn dumb to even be allowed to make a mistake. Government's going to take your money, and we'll call it Social Security, and we'll solve this problem for you. We're going to become your guardians. And the people went down and signed up for Social Security. My granddad was opposed to it, but he went down and signed up because he thought he had to and because that's what the company required. You know, he was working for a lumber company, Northern Redwood Lumber Company up in Corbell, California. And they said, well, this is what we got to do, so go down and sign up. And he went down and signed up. He didn't like the idea, but he didn't think he had a choice. Now, of course, today, you people go to college, and you get out of college, and you get this PhD, and you got to go to work for a university or somebody. You got to have a Social Security number. Or you go to school, and you come out, and you're trained to go into the military, and the military says, well, you got to have a Social Security number. Or you come out of school, and you want to go work for a General Motors or Microsoft, and they say, well, you got to have a Social Security number. Well, they're not whistling Dixie. They're just telling you that's what we require to work here. What nobody told you was you don't have to work at General Motors or Microsoft. You know, you could go into private business for yourself. If you didn't have a Social Security number, for instance, I run a private law school. If I were to work as a college professor up here at some other law school, I'd have to have a Social Security number. If I have my own law school, I don't have to have one. If I deal in gold and silver coin and I don't deal in commercial paper, then I don't have to have a Social Security number. If I'm going to deal in commercial paper and I'm going to have mortgages and, you know, bank accounts and so on, well, then I got to have a Social Security number. It's one of the requirements. If I'm going to go down and get welfare and food stamps, and if I'm going to go down to job service to get a job, I got to have a Social Security number. But there's no requirement, boys and girls, that you and I go down and get Social Security numbers. Unless we want to enter into some kind of commercial enterprise in partnership with corporations which are chartered by the government or go into partnership with the government itself. I don't want to do any of the above. Now, I got a couple of minutes here, and somebody asked me, well, how do you live? And the answer is, boys and girls, George Gordon lives very well. Thank you. I'm not going to tell you how well I live. But I'll say this, in 1979, 80, and 81, I was running a business that employed 30 people, produced $100,000 a month or about $1 million a year or a little more. And I lived very well, and I paid my taxes and did all those things that normal people do. Working in the system, I had a bank account and checking accounts and insurance and Social Security number and all the things that go with it. And I lived very well. Well, I dropped out of all of that, gave it up, and went back to practicing the Mosaic Law, went back to practicing property and property rights, gave up the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you know, like the second plank, income tax, and fifth plank, central bank, and the first plank, abolition of property. Went back to practicing the Ten Commandments in place of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and I can report to you that I still live very well, thank you, without Social Security. All right, so that's the tip of the iceberg right there. That's the way the tax has increased. That's the way the tax impacts upon you. We got a break right here. We'll be back next program. And I'll show you what Social Security is going to pay. We'll take a look at Social Security by the numbers next time. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and are mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. So for more information, go to the website, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Be sure to order your free general law CD package. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.